back with you on The Leader. Dieter Kurtenbach hanging out until 10 p.m. A reminder that we are your unofficial and unsanctioned Golden State Warriors post-game show. But let's talk a little bit of 49ers football with one of our favorites here on KMBR tonight. His name is Brian Peacock, and you, of course, know him as the host of the Locked On 49ers podcast. And his insights, his analysis, second to none. Don't tell Nick Wagner I said that, because he's coming on a little bit later. But second to none, in my opinion. That's why we have him on so often. Brian, how are you doing after a 49ers victory Sunday? We've gotten a few of those in a row now, huh?
Oh, I'm doing great. I appreciate the intro, Dieter. And it's okay. You can put me second behind Nick Wagner. I'm definitely okay with that. Look, the 49ers are probably the most well-covered team in the NFL. I will say that. There's a lot of great places to go for content. So I do appreciate you choosing me
always
to chat ball with, Dieter.
Always, always. Let's get right into it. What did you make of that weird-as-hell game against the Minnesota Vikings? It wasn't the normal formula, and yet it kind of was at the same time. A lot of people want to view that game as, hey, a nice job by the 49ers to kind of scrape one out in a strange way to win a game that's funky and weird. And you could swing it the other way and say, hey, man, their brand of sauce didn't exactly work as well as they thought it would, and certainly not as well as it did work against the Jaguars and the Rams before it. Where do you fall in sort of the spectrum of not so proud, extremely proud?
Well, if you ask Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer, it's because the Niners weren't getting called for holding all night
long.
That was a really bad look for an NFL head coach.
Can we analyze that for a half second? I want you to put a pin in what I'm certain is going to be a great point, but I wasn't going to bring this up. I'm glad you did. I don't give credence to scoundrels, but now that it's been mentioned, we're going to go in. I didn't see what the hell he was talking about. Like, I'd like to think that covering Nick Bosa on a week-in, week-out basis, I'm familiar with the concept of holding, and I'm very aware, former offensive lineman, I'm very aware that holding happens all the time and isn't called. I get it. I understand. The Niners, I believe, only had two holding calls against them, both against Lake and Tomlinson. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one, if you have that information readily available. And both times I was like, I'm not sure. One of them was a lot closer and certainly justifiable. There was one holding call on Lakin Tomlinson that at first glance I go, oh yeah, you watch the replay a little bit tighter. You go, no, terrible call. What the hell are they talking about holding on every play?
Yeah, if there's anybody who has a gripe about being held in the NFL, it's Nick Bosa. So Mike Zimmer can get in line behind Nick Bosa when it comes to non-holding calls. And you're right, it's difficult because you're taught to hold as an offensive lineman. You just can't get your hands too wide and you can't make it obvious. And so there's holding on just about every single play, and similar to defensive pass interference. And you could throw a lot of flags, and they throw too many flags as it is. So I'm definitely in the let them play camp when it comes to a lot of those things, unless it's egregious. And you're right, one of those Lake and Tomlinson holds, and I think it was on back-to-back plays, maybe because Mike Zimmer was getting in the ref's ear, he was able to get a couple of calls there. But when they showed the replay, it looked like Alex Mack was holding more than Lakin Tomlinson was on one of those plays. So I don't really even know, and I don't put much into it. And look, just the way I looked at it, and I like what George Kittle said about it after the game, is like, you know, make better plays. That's all it comes down to in the NFL. And you're going to have to make plays despite some bad calls sometimes, because the NFL is a very difficult thing to officiate right now. And it seems like it gets more difficult year to year.
I'm sorry that the defensive line of nothing but defensive tackles that the Minnesota Vikings put out there on Sunday felt like they were constantly being held. But George Kittle's right. How about you get into the damn backfield and make some plays anyway? And certainly the Niners, at least one guy on the Niners, 97, knows how to do just that. I interrupted you with a strange aside. Let's go back to the initial point. Where do you stand on the Niners after that win, a third straight?
I think it was really important, and we talked about it last week right here on these very airwaves, Dieter, about what happens when the 49ers don't have a game script early going their way and they get in a hole early, and that's exactly what happened. And they were still able to climb out of that hole with the same formula, with basically the run game, and it was a little bit surprising that they went so much to the air at the very beginning of the game, and it was clear Jimmy was off from the get-go and sailed some passes high and then threw that interception and got an earful on the sideline from Kyle Shanahan. And it seemed to settle everybody down. And then Jimmy went on to make some pretty good throws the rest of the game, and he wasn't perfect, but he was good enough to win. That's why I call him Jimmy W. Mm-hmm. He's not Jimmy G to me. He's Jimmy W. The 49ers win. And then in the end of the game, Kirk Cousins looked like what Jimmy Garoppolo looked like at the beginning of the game and was lining up under the right guard instead of the center and threw a bad interception to a linebacker. So it was really an odd game, and it was amazing to see how similar Kirk Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo, both Kyle Shanahan quarterbacks, played and how similar of players they look like in that game. And really the 49ers just had more bullets and they were better up front on both sides of the ball, and that's what did it. And in the end, they were able to run the ball enough and make enough plays in the passing game to go get another W. And they're just playing such complimentary football right now, and the defense has been don't break, and the offense is doing enough. And even when Jimmy Garoppolo's maybe not ultra efficient and just okay efficient, mm-hmm. That's enough for the 49ers to still win games against a team that they're evenly matched against. It's going to be fun to see if they can beat some really good football teams a little bit later down the road, because they're obviously playing different football than they were at the beginning of the season when they played some good football teams.
When are they going to play these really good football teams? You say down the road. I suppose it's in the playoffs, but I'm not even sure that's true. Yeah. Is that even true? I don't even know. I don't even think the Niners are that good. I'll just be blunt. I think they're a one-trick pony, and I think that's a very impressive trick, and I think that there's a lot of teams that don't have a trick as good as the 49ers, but I'm not inspired watching them. This team doesn't stack up in any way to the 2019 team that we saw, but they're going to make the playoffs, as well they should, and they're going to play a bunch of teams that are sort of the same thing at this juncture, so long as they can keep this trick going. I'm not sure there's a good team. I'm not sure they're going to face a good team. I don't understand what's happening in the NFL, Brian. Can you shed some light on where the hell the good teams went?
Beyond the 49ers, who even is a good team in the entire league right now? And that's the parity that the league wants. And okay, NFL, you got it. This is the ultimate parity season that I can remember in a while. And now you've got, so many wild card spots, seven teams getting in each conference. And you've got 17 games now, and 15 of the 16 teams in the NFC are probably going to think they're going to be in it almost through all 18 of those NFL weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's wild. But the 49ers are at least one of the six teams that are above 500 in the NFC, and it seems like nobody else wants to get into the playoffs. So by default, the 49ers are at least going to be one of those wild card teams, it looks like, right now, because they beat their biggest competition for it, and that was a massive change of the odds for the 49ers to beat the Vikings versus if they would have lost to the Vikings. So the 49ers at this point are looking really good to be in the playoffs, and then what happens there, we'll find out. But you're right, even looking at the schedule, the Cincinnati Bengals, depending on the week, look like a really good team or a really bad team, and the Tennessee Titans, depending on the week and who's available for them, look like a really good team or a really bad team. Will A.J. Brown and will Julio Jones be available for him when the 49ers play them? That'll make that game a lot more difficult at their house. And will the super team of the Los Angeles Rams ever win a game again? Super teams don't work in the NFL, by the way, do they?
Apparently not.
As soon as they made those big deals, they have looked like they're in shambles. So I have no idea. I don't know who's good. I think the Packers and the Cardinals are pretty good.
Okay.
And I think the Patriots are looking, the Patriots and Chiefs all of a sudden are looking like two of the best teams in the NFL.
Yeah, well, if you have a great defense and a great quarterback, you can probably get away with it. Now, I'm not talking about just the Patriots there. I'm talking about two teams respectively. though Mac Jones has looked just fine, and you know what? The Chiefs defense has looked just fine too.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
What do you think happens to this 49ers offense? As we talked to Brian Peacock of the Locked On 49ers podcast, what do you think happens with this offense? Kyle Shanahan's coming out here and saying that they're going to be just fine without Deebo Samuel. I saw what this team looked like before they fully actualized Deebo Samuel and was putting him in the backfield to be a running back and mixing him up every which way. It was around three games ago. Funny how they started winning all those games after that. It was an unimpressive offense, a wildly unimpressive offense for a Kyle Shanahan team. Once Debo started getting into the mix, they had mismatches everywhere, and the ball was moving like nobody's business. And it was 4 games ago because they were moving it pretty good against Arizona in the same realm, too. They just fumbled the ball a bunch. Without Debo, you obviously have concerns about the 49ers offense, but are you buying what Kyle Shanahan says, that they'll ultimately be okay?
I think they should be okay. Will they be okay? I don't know. But obviously, it has to be a huge dose of George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk. And George Kittle's looking healthy. I think with more and more targets, he could be, you know, the same guy we know that he already is. And the X factor is Brandon Ayuk. So can Brandon Ayuk make a bunch of big plays? Can they double his target load and he do what Debo Samuel had done for the early part of the season? Now he's not coming. They might have some tricks up his sleeve and maybe put him in the backfield and try a run or two that way. It's not going to be like what Debo Samuel was doing, but you know, there's a lot of other guys that are pretty good after the catch on the team, and maybe not at Debo's level, but they can collect rack yards and yak yards, all the racks and yaks. So I think they should be okay. Will they? I don't know, because Debo Samuel's been such a huge part of the offense. And if you take Debo Samuel out of the offense for the first 12 weeks, the 49ers offense wouldn't be very good. So they've got to show us something they haven't shown us yet this year. And on paper, I think they should be able to do it. And they should be able to still run the ball and play things a little bit straight up, especially against a really bad team right now, which is the Seattle Seahawks. But, man, it's almost the worst time to play the Seahawks when they're down like this, because I feel like they can't play that bad again against the 49ers because it never works out that way. So I'm fascinated to see how this one looks in Week 13 with the Debo-less 49ers and maybe a Seahawks team that is in a position, it would seem like, that the 49ers can step on their neck a little bit, and we haven't seen that in a decade.
I'd go beyond stepping on neck. I mean, they can kill them. They can end this thing.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson spent the whole offseason looking for a way out. It did not get massively resolved, right? It still looms over the team. He wanted out. Pete Carroll looks in over his head, and it has been slowly deteriorating now for a couple of years, and it doesn't appear as if there's a solution. This thumb injury might have been the nail in the coffin, but the 49ers can bring finality to the scenario. That has to be an incredibly enticing opportunity for San Francisco to be able to, again, not just kill off the Seahawks for this year, perhaps kill off the Seahawks for a long time. As someone who's watched this team on a day-in, day-out basis, what kind of a moment is this? Because, first off, do you agree with me that that's what's on the line here? And second, if that's the case, this is the biggest game in a whole long time.
Absolutely. It's huge. And Seahawks have been such a big thorn in the 49ers' side. And there's been a lot of fun games, but there's been a lot of games that aren't very fun. And mostly at the hands of the Seahawks, it seems like every season. And Russell Wilson and when you have a coach quarterback, like, that's what you want in the NFL. You want coach quarterback cohesion.
100%.
When you're really good at both of those spots, you're going to be a good team for a long time. And that's what we've seen. But there's so much else that's deteriorated around them. And, you know, under Pete Carroll, the Seahawks, even more recently, and they've still won. And I mean, it was a calendar year ago that Russell Wilson was an MVP candidate, and he was a front runner.
They were 12-4 last year. This team wasn't even good last year, but Russell Wilson was so good, they were 12-4. They won the division. I mean,
and they've
every year they've done that nonsense.
It's amazing, and they win in such a different fashion, and they play an old school brand of football, a different brand of football than almost every team in the NFL plays, but it's gone so far the other direction that they're so far behind in the amount of plays they've run per game. And it's just, they're playing a different era of football right now. And it's gotten so far the other way that I think, you know, it's almost as if the game's passed Pete Carroll by, and this was the season that the NFL blew by him like Usain Bolt. So I don't know if that's really the case. I don't know if it's an injury problem or just a roster problem, but at some point they've got to think about blowing it up. And that starts with maybe getting some first-round picks for Russell Wilson in the offseason. If you're going to trade him, you might as well trade the ball and start over with a new head coach, because it doesn't help to have a 70-year-old head coach if you're going to start a rebuild.
Well, at least they traded away a couple of first-round picks, including what might be a very enticing first-round pick yeah. for, you know, an in-the-box safety. That's always good business.
Which would be the number four pick in the draft right now.
Say what you will about spending a couple first-round picks and the number three overall pick on, I guess, a backup quarterback. That's what I'm being told. I don't agree with that. But at least that's a priority position. Last time I checked, box safety doesn't really play unless, you know, I guess mm-hmm. you're playing for Pete Carroll in 2011 or something like that. He ain't Cam Chancellor is all I'm trying to say. We're talking to Brian Peacock of the Locked On 49ers podcast. Elijah Mitchell, broken finger, still handed him that rock again and again and again and again, and he delivered again. This guy has been a revelation. Not that much of a surprise to me. Well, a little bit. I was big on Elijah Mitchell. Coming out of ULL, this is a guy I've known about and have watched with great interest for 2 years. I love me some Sun Belt football, but I didn't see him being a bell cow back in the NFL like week one. And here he is. He's incredible. What can you say about Elijah Mitchell, the season that he's had, and the responsibility that lies on his shoulders, especially now with Debo out?
Yeah, it's amazing how Kyle Shanahan seems to have a doghouse for some players, but man, when you get in his good graces, he just wants to give you the ball any way he can, any time he can. We've seen that with Debo, and we've seen it now with the rookie sixth rounder, Elijah Mitchell, who's been probably, I mean, Najee Harris, local Antioch kid, has gotten more touches, but
Mitchell's better.
Per touch, Mitchell has done much more with those than Najee Harris has for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So he's probably been the best running back in the NFL as a rookie, and he's a perfect fit for Kyle Shanahan because he has the toughness. He hits the holes extremely hard, and he gets where he needs to be quickly and decisively, and he's got a little bit of top speed to make a big play too. So mm-hmm. he's a fantastic fit and toughness. Kyle Shanahan clearly values toughness in his players, and you talk about hurt ribs and a broken finger with a pin in it, and you're playing a week later.
Damn.
That's what Elijah Mitchell's doing right now, and so you can see why Kyle Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan, when guys are healthy, it's really funny because when guys are healthy and they're on the field, Kyle Shanahan will use them as much as possible. He'll put Debo in the backfield for 10 to 12 carries if he has to mm-hmm. to win a football game on a Sunday, and even with all the injuries, he just kept handing the ball, 27 times to Elijah Mitchell, and once you're on the field, Kyle Shanahan's going to use you. Now, it worries me for Mitchell's health, and it definitely worries yeah. me for Debo's health. I think it might even be a blessing in disguise for Debo to not have a serious injury and right. for Kyle Shanahan to go back to the drawing board and realize, okay, look, I cannot treat Debo like a running back because he's going to get hurt like a running back.
But you can't not treat Debo like a running back because he has the ability to change the game for you, and this is the paradox. That Kyle Shanahan faces.
Yeah. Do it two or three times a game instead of 10 to 12 times.
Well, that would require his offense to stink for a couple more plays per game. I mean, it really is as simple as that. I'd be remiss before we let you go to not ask about the defense. We mentioned Nick Bosa. It would be nice if he could get a running mate. That would be pretty good for the 49ers. We'll leave that at that. We know where the secondary is. The safeties are playing better. Josh Norman punches a ball out better than anyone in the NFL. He also gets burned repeatedly, just countless times. DK Metcalf versus Emmanuel Mosley version. I don't know what round this is in their fight, but Mosley got the best of him, it seemed, the last go around, which is a major upgrade. But the linebacker core is where I want to go. Aziz has been incredible. Aziz Al-Shaair, FAU product, go Owls. Been incredible. But Dre Greenlaw didn't give you anything in his return to the field, got injured again, and now Fred Warner is going to miss some time. That is deeply concerning to me. How do you feel about it going into this game against the Seahawks?
Yeah, it's concerning against a team like Seattle that wants to play an old-school brand of football where the seven guys in the box make probably a bigger impact than maybe some other games. And I love Aziz Al-Shaair. He's been amazing for the 49ers, and so I've got no problem with him in there, but who's going to be the guys next to him? And that's the big question. Are you going to see maybe some Hufanga drop down and play a little bit of linebacker?
You know we are.
One of the problems with Hufanga at safety is he's really good when the play's in front of him and breaking on the football, but when the play's behind him, he's not as good, and the 49ers ask their strong safeties to you know, interchange with the free safety, and sometimes he's playing single high, and I just don't think that's a great position to put the rookie in, and I don't know if it'll be ever his strength as an NFL safety. So, you know, maybe like they did with Marcel Harris, we'll start to see some Hufanga at linebacker. You've got Flanagan Foles there at linebacker. He's got some athleticism, former safety himself. So it's not ideal. If you can hide a position group in the NFL on defense, linebacker is probably the one that's the easiest to do. But that said, you know, missing Debo, missing Warner, those are two massively important players for the 49ers. So it's going to be fun to watch and see how they overcome that.
Well, if Hufanga keeps playing like this, maybe the Seahawks will give up 2 first-round picks for him in the future. Brian, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on. Hope your Thanksgiving was fantastic. And let's do this again real soon.
I appreciate it, Dieter. Anytime.
Brian Peacock, ladies and gentlemen, Locked On 49ers podcast. Subscribe, rate, tell Brian he's the best, because he absolutely is. Interesting stuff. I don't think that linebacker is an easy position to hide, but that's where Brian's at. I guess we're going to find out on Sunday afternoon up in the great state of Washington. Kurtenbach is with you until 10 on the Sports Leader.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing to say.
Congratulations.
Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.